Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Hello to you, the listener. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Gail Seiler, your host. We have a combination of stories today. Some weeks there's just a lot going on, and it's hard to decide what to cover. So we're going to give you a sampling. We're going to cover a little politics, a little art, and a little innovation, I guess you could say. Later, Cindy Hicks will be here to talk about Art Walk, which is coming up next Friday, a week from today, here in Ames. And in the last part of the show, Betty Baird from the Ames Progressive Alliance will join us, and she'll be bringing other guests with her to talk about political workshops with the goal of stimulating civic engagement in the electoral process. So we'll be hearing more about that. But first, we'll be hearing from a team of apparel and engineering students and faculty who produced a jacket that uses solar energy to charge electronic devices. And they showcased it last week at the Environmental Protection Agency's National Sustainable Design Expo in Washington, D.C. Six graduate students and undergrad students were on the team, along with five faculty advisors. They were all involved in producing this solar jacket, and we're joined now by two of the faculty members and one of the students. So thanks for being here. We have Dr. Fatma Beitar.
That's right.
And Dr. Ellen McKinnon.
Good morning.
Both assistant professors in the College of Human Sciences. And we also have a student, Catherine Kahlberg. Welcome, and thanks again for being here. So first off, because this is radio and we can't show the jacket to our listeners, can one of you just kind of describe what it looks like so our listeners can envision it?
So essentially, it's a black kind of lightweight outdoor jacket, and it also incorporates a red and black digital print to kind of help blend in with the solar panels. It has 9 panels total across the front chest, the back chest, the shoulders, the upper arms, and then there's also 2 large panels on the lower back that you can actually fold to hide in a flap manner so that you don't see those larger panels. It has a full center front zipper. It's got long sleeves. I don't know if that kind of gives you a better idea of what it looks like.
And how long is the jacket?
I would say it's kind of your average length for like an outdoor, like maybe a parka length, but not as heavy as a parka would be.
Okay. And so the goal of this is that people would then be able to plug other devices into it? Is that right?
Right. Yeah. So when you're out and about hiking or whatever, you can power whatever portable electronics for communication or just safety that you have with you.
And have you worn it to see what it feels like?
I haven't. It's too big for me, but I know Catherine did and Dr. McKinney did.
Yeah.
And it fits great.
Uh-huh. And it feels, it's not real stiff or?
Not really. I mean, the panels are pretty lightweight and flexible themselves, and they're in areas that we tried to make sure that they weren't on any areas that you would be moving, like they're not right on your elbow or anything like that. So yeah, I mean, it's, I would say, a little oversized on me, but that was kind of the point for a female body, and I think it's comfortable.
Uh-huh. Yep, it looks comfortable.
Okay. So where did this idea come from, to make a solar jacket that then charges other devices?
I know that it originally started with Dr. Yolanda Sanders' previous research study. Before coming to Iowa State, she was working at Colorado State, and she started this project there. Mm-hmm. And after moving here, she involved all of us into this project. Mm-hmm. And we have a textile science faculty, Dr. Chun-Hee Xiang. She was leading this project, the EPA project, along with Dr. Sanders and Dr. Randai. And so this is how it started.
And there was an engineering professor involved as well. Is that right?
That's right. Dr. Dai.
With the solar panels especially.
Exactly. She's from aerospace engineering. Mm-hmm. And she works with solar panels for her research. With her addition, we were also able to recruit students from the engineering department.
And how long have you been working on it?
We got started, I would say, with kind of the initial talks and starting with the design process back in like October, maybe even a little bit earlier.
Yeah. So you worked on it pretty quickly. So mm-hmm. just in the past school year, really.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Just was the past school year. And really the last semester is when the bulk of the work was done.
And did you have funding to work on it or to develop the prototype? And where was that funding from?
So the Environmental Protection Agency funded this project through their P3 project, which supported some of our materials and our travel to the expo as well.
And P3 stands for?
People, Planet, and Prosperity.
That was the name of the competition that you, because this was that you were actually entered into a competition with the jacket while you were in Washington, D.C. recently.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the competition is to try to get additional funding. Is that how it works?
That's right. Okay. Before going to Washington, D.C., we, as a faculty, we worked on another proposal for the second phase. And we requested more money to do all of this jacket, more. So we are still waiting to hear from them. So hopefully in June, mid-June, we'll be hearing something.
Well, good luck
on
that.
Keeping our fingers crossed for that, yeah.
And what was the experience like being in D.C. for this event?
It was very interesting because this was the first year that they actually combined our smaller event with all of the university teams with a much larger technology conference. So it was interesting because we were able to get involved in conversation with a lot of industry professionals and scientists that, you know, had all of these ideas of, oh, like you could do this or did you know you could solder wires differently? Things like that. So it was really interesting and really neat to be able to, I mean, especially for me as an apparel design student, mm-hmm. be able to interact with a lot of people from different disciplines outside of what my normal interactions in a university setting are. And so that was very fun. And I feel like I learned a lot that way just from the different types of things people were doing and the input that people had for ways that we could explore new opportunities just with our jacket alone.
Mm-hmm. And so you saw other ideas from other student groups as well as these the scientists and more professional kind of mm-hmm. approaches.
Yeah, there were, I want to say they said 35 other student teams mm-hmm. there. Most in phase one, but some that had been funded for phase two this year. And then there were also, you know, research universities that were there and small business companies and international companies that did, I mean, just anything and everything that relates to science and technology, it seemed like. It was very cool.
So going, it sounds like it was a great experience, especially for the undergrad students.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. And going back to the actual design of it, what would you say, what was the hardest part? Or were there any kind of like things, barriers that you hit? It was like, oh my gosh, this maybe wasn't a good idea to start this at all. So yeah, what were there any things like that?
One of the challenges in the early part of it was when we were working with the engineering students and we said, okay, how many of these solar panels do we need to put on this jacket to harvest the amount of energy to, say, charge our iPhone? And when they came back and they said, oh, you need 10 of these panels and they're 6 inches by 8 inches or something, it was a little startling mm-hmm. to us as designers to think about how are we going to incorporate that much solar panel. So I think that was one of the interesting mm-hmm. kind of challenges.
Just the realization of how much surface area was going to be needed.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. how to make that look good and feel comfortable mm-hmm. and...
Yeah, and I think that really spurred our students on, though, as designers, to come up with some innovative strategies to mm-hmm. work all that in.
Yeah, and I imagine even 10 years ago, this wouldn't have been possible because the technology of solar panels wouldn't even have allowed this kind of being built into fabric. Is that accurate?
I would assume so, yeah, because I believe the flexible panels that we used are a fairly new technology. And I mean, there's even room for improvement in those. One of the things that we ran into with the design process is that every panel has a slightly different coloration, every batch that they make. So, you know, that's something that right now we couldn't really focus on in the design of what color the solar panels actually were. But again, is something that hopefully we'll be able to continuously be improved as the technology, you know, gets more work.
Mm-hmm. So if you get the next round of funding, what will you start doing next? What's the next thing to work on?
Oh, One of the major issues to work on is figuring out how to make this for a full run of sizes, small, medium, large, men and women. I think the larger sizes are not so much of a concern, but when you get into smaller sizes, then you have to figure out, okay, how do we get all of these solar panels on less surface area? Mm-hmm. So there's that physical challenge. And then there's still work to do on the interior workings of it, mm-hmm. and getting a better and more manufacturable system of getting the wires and the sewing and all of that.
So that it could actually be produced and marketed and...
Yes.
Yeah. And do you, how do you, so this, you presented this at the sustainability competition and, or fair, I guess it was in some way, exhibition. How do you see this contributing to a more sustainable world or society?
Well, the idea is that a lot of times when you're charging your devices, you're using wasteful materials. You know, you just use alkaline batteries and then you throw them away and mm-hmm. what happens to them from there. So kind of the goal with that is that by using, you know, if your everyday consumer or, you know, your first aid or first response, if they can harvest solar power, then A, you know, the longevity of their devices can increase because they don't have to be replacing it with a wasteful material. So that's kind of the goal, is to hopefully get more of that, you know, natural resource being mm-hmm. used by a much larger market. And then we also used a very sustainable design process, too, kind of using virtual prototyping and patterning to help us actually reduce our waste in the process. Mm-hmm. So being able to apply that both, you know, long-term and, like, manufacturing a whole line would also kind of help with that idea of being more sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when will people see things like this on the market? Do you have a projection?
It's hard to say. I mean, if our jacket, you know, took off and could get marketed, that'd be amazing. But I know from our research, there hasn't been a lot that's been done, especially in, like, wearable, you know, jackets mm-hmm. or coats, shirts, things like that. So it's hard to say just because the consumer market, you know, everyday people like you and I, nobody has a very good understanding of what they do and don't like, or maybe why they're not buying more wearable electron or like wearable technology. There's definitely kind of a gap in the knowledge of what the market likes.
Right.
So it's kind of hard to answer that question.
Yeah, we are researching that too.
Yeah, okay. All right. That's part of your upcoming work. Well, this has been fascinating. Thank you very much for talking with us. I've been speaking with Dr. Fatma Beitar and Dr. Ellen McKinney from the Department of Apparel, Events, and Hospitality Management, along with Catherine Kahlberg, a student in that department. And congratulations to you for getting as far as you have
Thank
with this
you.
Project. And we hope you get funding for the next phase.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. We're going to have a quick song now, and then we'll be back.
Sun, we might say it's all right.
That was Here Comes the Sun, and written and performed by George Harrison. I thought that would be a good follow-up to the solar jacket story, have us thinking about solar energy. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Cindy Hicks is with us now. Cindy is with the Main Street Cultural District here in Ames. Thanks for coming in today, Cindy.
Good morning. I hope we see the sun today.
I don't know. Yesterday was nice, but today the weather doesn't look so good in terms of sun. Yeah. But Ames has one of its big annual events, Art Walk, coming up soon. And I must say that Art Walk is one of my favorites of all the, you know, kind of traditional events here in Ames. So let's talk about that. To start, maybe for people who haven't been yet, haven't attended Art Walk, can you just explain what it is?
Well, this is the 22nd year for Art Walk in downtown Ames, and so it is a very popular event. Every year it gets a little bigger, and every year we think, wow, last year was awesome. I don't know how we can top that, and all of a sudden it just happens. So what we are doing is we are showcasing local artists for the most part. There are a few that are not local, but showcasing local artists who are hosted by our downtown businesses. So we want people who visit our downtown to have an experience with art, all different genres of art, and we want them to maybe walk into a business and experience a downtown business that they haven't experienced before, or maybe some of their old favorites. They can do that too.
Mm-hmm. So it's an opportunity to see local artists, but also become more acquainted with Main Street and what's here.
Yeah, exactly. And we have just a fabulous downtown area. The Main Street Cultural District is just vibrant and lively, and there's just all kinds of shopping and dining and entertainment downtown. And so it's really a great place to be.
And in my experience, some of the artists will be right out on the street making art. Some are in the businesses, and so you can experience it kind of indoors and out.
Yes. So you walk up and down the sidewalk, and you're right, there will be artists out on the sidewalk.
Uh-huh.
There will be artists inside businesses, and so it's going to be a really fun night. As I said, we grow a little bit every year. So this year we have 64 businesses involved, 80-plus artists. And
that's a lot.
Yes. it's pretty amazing. So and it goes all the way from Banshell Park to Wheatsfield.
Okay. Oh, I didn't realize it went that far.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
So you can start on either end, down up at Banshell Park. It's the kickoff night of Ames on the Half Shell. They are hosting
the summer music series.
Mix, yes. Mm-hmm. And that music starts at 5 p.m. Art Walk starts at 5 p.m. And so you could start there if you want, or you could start on the other end of the street with Wheatsfield, and they will have an artist and then wine and artesian cheese tasting. So, you know, that's fun. They have their outdoor patio now, deck, where you can sit outside and enjoy a beverage before you walk up the street.
Mm-hmm.
So as you make your way up the street, of course, there will be artists at the depot. There's a at Night Owl Printing, they're hosting an author who writes and illustrates children's books. At Aunt Maud's, there are two artists, and an acrylic painter and a photographer. Hy-Vee is having the guy who does the pottery, and so he will be with his pottery wheel out on the sidewalk.
Yeah, I remember that from
that's really, really fun.
That is fun
to watch.
So that's the Hy-Vee Pharmacy
that's
on Main Street, down the end there.
It's the kickoff night for the Ames Art Commission Neighborhood Sculpture Walk 2017. Mm. So our downtown sculptures are changed out. You can stop at their table and pick up a map that will show you where all of the new sculptures are at, and they are just really fun to look at. We have our public piano unveiling. in Tom Evans Park. This has been a project of a PhD student at Iowa State. It started last summer. She received a grant, and that grant went to help her with a summer camp for children who were gifted, who studied the effects of music on the brain. And as part of that camp, they painted two pianos. And one of those pianos will be in Tom Evans Park, and it will be there for the season, for anybody who wants to stop and play music.
And play.
But we'll have a variety of musicians there on the night of Art Walk who will be playing that piano.
I've seen that in other cities, and it's very, very nice. It's a wonderful surprise when you just come upon someone sitting at a piano outside playing.
Yes, I'm really, really excited about it. As you make your way up the street, of course, there will be artists in and out of the businesses. The chainsaw artist is coming back again this year, and he will start with a log, for lack of a better word, and by the end of the night, it will be something beautiful. He did that last year. It was very popular. We have partnered with YSS, so the 400 block of Kellogg will be closed off, and there will be a variety of children's activities set up there.
Okay.
And there will be displays of artwork that were done by the children of YSS. This is part of
That's new, isn't it?
It is new, and it's part of their 40th year anniversary celebration. And so we are very, very glad to have them as part of Art Walk and showcasing what the youth of our community can do. And they just do wonderful things at YSS. So we're just super excited about that.
And did I hear you say that there'll also be activities there for children to do?
Yes.
So families can look for that area in particular.
Yes.
With younger children.
Becky the Balloon Lady, sponsored by Stolte and Stolte Family Dentistry. And Art Walk is sponsored by Stolte and Stolte this year, too, as well as the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau and Wells Fargo Bank. We will have AVEC Design, which is over on 5th Street, will have bamboo rain sticks for children to make. The American Legion will have paper-made spring tulips that kids can make. We'll have Tim Reed at Duckworth Waring with his children's books. I mean, there's just so many fun things to do. For the adults, a paint and sip at Della Vitti, so you can come look at art, or you can make it yourself.
Have a little wine if you choose.
Have a little wine. Here at KHOI, Reds Blues will be playing. And I believe here on the inside, you guys will be doing your doodle art again. Is that correct?
It's a mural. That's quite a tradition. I know that they've done that the past 2 years, and it's been wonderful. Can I just explain what that is?
You go right ahead.
Because I really love this idea. So they get a pretty large canvas and put it up inside the station at 410 Douglas, and everyone is welcome to come in. Ursula Rudenberg, our station manager, is a mural artist, so she usually starts to put some basic design, the KHOI logo in the center, and some basic design elements to get the mural started, but then people are welcome to add whatever they want, and we have just a ton of paints and brushes and materials there, and every year it's different, and you can see the two previous ones as well, and they're really beautiful. It's amazing what emerges from that kind of community collaboration. So I think it's a really nice thing to do during Art Walk is just stop in and paint for a few minutes or a long time and add to the mural.
Yeah, and you know, I would encourage people to come hungry. There are going to be many downtown businesses who have food samples to try at Thread It. There will be a gluten-free layered tiramisu. So I'm excited to see about that.
Yeah.
That sounds yummy.
At Thread It, okay.
Yes. Thread It is a alterations shop. It's their oh, what's the name of the building? There,
yeah,
Tom
it's
Evans
in this
Park,
block right yep. over here. Yeah, isn't it?
Well, no, this one is at Tom Evans.
Oh, okay.
The building there, the town center. That's what it is.
Okay.
Chocolatery Stom will have Prairie Moon wine samples. Great Plains Pizza will be set up selling pizza slices. We'll have mm-hmm. Kona Ice, Macubana, and Brandemeyer popcorn. You can also enjoy some of our downtown restaurants. I really feel like you're walking around, you're looking at art, and one of the best parts of our downtown is the wonderful food that is mm-hmm. served in our downtown restaurants. You have Aunt Maud's, you have The Spice, you have Bar La Tosca, Whiskey River. If you haven't been in McFly's, you're really missing a delight. I would suggest their brisket mac and cheese, which is a work of art all its own.
Okay.
So
culinary art.
Yes. So many things to do on that night.
Wonderful.
And I would just suggest people get down here early and make an evening of it.
Okay.
And Bring your families.
Okay. And parking will be available all around.
Yes, there are the back lots on the south side of Main Street.
Which are free.
Which are free. There's a parking lot at 6th and, is it 6th and Main? Or no, 6th and Douglas.
And Douglas,
there,
right.
But
by the library. Right.
There is a parking lot, a public parking lot across the street from City Hall.
Right.
And if you get out over by the library, you're going to find artwork before you get to Main Street, because we have businesses on 5th Street. We have businesses on 6th Street. We have businesses on the side streets. So don't feel
out
like,
from
yes,
Main Street.
Yeah,
you have to rush to Main Street.
Yeah, you don't have to rush to Main Street.
Okay.
You can meander.
Explore. See what's out there.
Yes.
Wonderful. Well, like I said, it's one of my favorite events, and so I encourage people to return if they've been in the past and to try it out this year if they've never been there before. And just to repeat, it's next Friday, June 2nd.
Correct.
From
5 till 8 p.m.
5 till 8. Okay. And so people should come on down.
Yes. Bring your walking shoes and put your Fitbit on, because you're going to get your steps in.
Good exercise. Okay. Thank you very much, Cindy, for coming in. I've been speaking with Cindy Hicks about Art Walk coming up 1 week from today in the evening.
Thanks for inviting me.
Now we'll just have a little break with another song, and then we'll move on to the Ames Progressive Alliance.
I go out walking after midnight, out in the moonlight, just like we used to do. I'm always walking after midnight, searching for you. I walk for miles along the highway. Well, that's just my way of saying I love you. I'm always walking after midnight, searching for you. I stop to see a weeping willow crying on his pillow. Maybe he's crying for me. And as the skies turn gloomy, night winds whisper to me, I'm lonesome. Midnight, out in the starlight, just hoping you may be
That was Walking After Midnight by Patsy Cline. I thought that would get us ready for Art Walk next week, which we were just talking about. This is Local Talk on KHOI, and now it's time for the monthly segment from Ames Progressive Alliance, and we're going to be hearing about two political training workshops that were held this year, and we'll hear from some of the participants and maybe one of the facilitators of that workshop. And from Ames Progressive Alliance, I have Ann Kinzel here at this moment. There may be some other people coming in and out and joining us, so we'll introduce them as they arrive. But Ann, do you want to tell us what's going to happen here in the next 25 minutes or so?
Okay. Well, good morning, everybody. We have two guests with us today, Jeanette Colton and Victoria Shapinski, and we're going to learn more about resources available to people interested in running for office at the local, state, national level, or who are interested in working for campaigns. We'll also be looking into what appears to be a growing interest on the part of women in running for local, state, and national office. Welcome, Victoria, Jeanette. It's great to have you this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's going to be fun to have you share your expertise and experiences with us. So, Jeanette, a little background. You're a community activist and an APA, or Ames Progressive Alliance, member and an educational assistant at Fellows Elementary. Tell us a little bit about your work at Fellows.
Yes, I am an educational assistant at Fellows. I help the little ones with lunch. I help in the classrooms with the teachers. I'm also an interpreter for the district, Spanish, English, so I do that freelancing whenever it's needed.
Great. And that led you to politics.
It did. It did. It did. I just always wanted to, I've always been very involved in what's going on, like service-oriented, and this being in the school and being in contact with families, it's kind of given me an insight of what happens and what things are working and what things we could work on.
Well, there's all kinds of paths to politics, I guess, from playground to politics, maybe a new one. But I have to say that Jeanette was recently recognized with the 2017 Ames Humanitarian Award. Congratulations.
Thank you.
She gave a wonderful speech.
Thank you so
worth
much.
Worth seeing on the web somewhere. I think this is on the city webpage.
Thank you.
So you're running for office in 2017. That's very exciting. But to get prepared to run for office, I understand you participated in the Ready to Run Iowa program at the CAT Center.
I did.
And when was that?
So when I did all the workshops, they had four, was it? And I think it started in February. So it just ended.
Yeah. And they're spread over a period of time.
Right.
So what was it? Maybe every 3 weeks or something like that?
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
I think it was January, March, April. So basically once a month.
And I want to add here that our other guest, Victoria Shapinski, is also a Ready to Run participant. And we have Betty Baird, another community activist who is familiar with a lot of these programs. So, Jeanette, I'm going to follow up with you. What made you decide to get into Ready to Run?
So I've been doing a lot of community work, and I just needed to get polished, really. I needed to learn what it is, what it takes. How do you get your message across? How you talk with people that they're decided to vote for you and they're undecided. So I needed all of that background information that when you're running, it's not just background, it's your life.
Tell us a little bit about what you mean about that. It's your life.
You are constantly thinking about this. And if you have the tools, the ones that they teach are Ready to Run, it makes this navigating the whole running situation a lot easier. You know what? So they talk about messaging. They talk about how do you say it? Like, how do you introduce yourself? And it's, I'm not the best at it yet, but it really gives me an insight. So I can see it now when I hear other people. I'm like, oh yeah, they're good, right? So it's really interesting. It's fascinating.
Well, for our listeners, I just want to let you know that Ready to Run Iowa is run right here at Iowa State University as part of the Carrie Chapman Catt Center for Women in Politics. It's my understanding that this grew out of a program in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. Rutgers.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And that it's been quite successful here in Iowa, and they've been doing it for a number of years. Now, it's broken into several workshops. What workshops did you attend, Jeanette?
There were four, and I help me out here.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember, and I should know better than others because I'm a frequent alumni, if that's a term, of Ready to Run, because this was my third time. One session focused on fundraising.
Messaging.
Another is on messaging.
Social media.
Social media, and, you know, there are components, and I can't remember where they fit, but like presenting yourself in public, how to put together a stump speech, how to speak in front of a camera. And then there was, and I think, you know, a lot of it's about messaging and different,
yeah,
different means of messaging. And then the big thing that, you know, unfortunately or fortunately, depending how you want to look at it, is fundraising, which spreads over all of those various types of topics that you cover. It all sort of boils down to that sometimes.
And I think it's important to note that Ready to Run is not just for candidates, although that is clearly the aim. It's also for people who are interested in appointments to boards and commissions and on people who want to be involved in campaigns. Mm-hmm. And so it's been going on since 2007. At one point, it actually had two tracks. It was done in basically a day, and you picked your track. And they've changed it since then. But it starts out with those basics, the background of Iowa, the background of boards and appointments, the background of the parties, and then moves on to the more refined topics.
Yep. So there's a lot of skills to learn to be a politician.
Absolutely, absolutely, and they're going to be able to tell you about it.
Great. Well, I think it's becoming more of a science. I mean, I think as we go along, there fortunately is a learning curve on how to do things in a more effective manner.
So are you talking, Victoria, about running for office, or are you talking once you are in office?
Well, I think a lot of those things, you know, hopefully those skills of how to connect with people, how to build relationships, how to present an effective message, hopefully those things carry over to when one is in office.
Mm-hmm.
Not just on the campaign trail.
So, Jeanette, you talked a lot about your experiences in the Ready to Run Iowa, but how has the project really helped you? How is it valuable for you to give up your time to attend these meetings? What's the most valuable thing you got there?
You know, I think the most, and I've thought about this quite a few, oftentimes, it's that it makes it sound doable. That was key for me, that you can actually do it. It's almost like if you have the time, the interest, you can do it. That was the biggest takeaway for me. It's doable and it's achievable.
I think I'm thrilled that you said that. I mean, because that's what we want to impart to others, is
Absolutely.
That we're doing it and it's doable.
And so can you.
Yeah.
Well, you obviously learned a lot from your attendance. Is there one thing you can share with the listeners that would be the most important thing that you think you've learned?
That is a great question. Let me think about that. So I think because of the messaging part, I'm still working on that one. I think the biggest part for me was to learn to focus.
Hmm.
Not just to, because I tend to, like, just go off on a tangent. And it drew me back to, like, get your message out there. Just focus on that. Focus on yourself. So that was a big piece, because I seem to just go on a tangent sometimes. I hope I won't do it here. Don't worry.
I'm sure you won't. I'm sure you won't. If anybody looks focused this morning, you do. I'm not going to speak about myself here. Okay.
But part of it's that, I mean, for me too, that thing about sort of sort of condensing it, because as you're going along, there are so many issues and we have so many concerns, and how do you bring that down to a manageable message and focus on those main points?
Totally, that's it.
Well, Victoria, you've obviously been to this rodeo before, as you have. You've run for office, you've been in office, and you're running again. As a ready-to-run Iowa participant, what would you tell somebody who was thinking about participating in these workshops?
Well, as I said, I am a frequent. I've been to three very different sessions of Ready to Run, which is held every 2 years, and I go because I keep meeting new people. So, even though the focus of the workshops might be the same, there's always new information and new people presenting, and so that's why I keep going. What was the question again?
Well, what would you tell somebody who was thinking about, maybe I should put my hat into to run? I've decided to run, but, you know, should I go to this workshop?
Yeah, and that's probably where I was heading, because that's where you meet people. That's where you meet other people who have made this decision or are thinking about it also. And so it's not just about going to a seminar and listening. It's also about those individuals that you connect with who are in that same place or close to where you are in the process of moving towards being a candidate or working on a campaign or doing, you know, something else that's related.
So you've mentioned there are four different workshops. Can you tell us a little bit about how this plays out? I mean, is this something where it's like old-fashioned, you sit there and you stare at the teacher, or how does it work?
There's eating involved.
Oh. It's Iowa. There's always eating involved.
We're at tables and there are various presenters, people who are currently in office, have been in office, people who run
panelists. They have there's several of them that they have like two or three, four panels all over Iowa. And that was interesting, wasn't it? People, they came from all over Iowa. I'm sitting from somebody next to they came from Sioux City, and I'm like, and I'm right here.
Yes. And it's also open to all political
affiliations.
So and that's an interesting aspect of it also, that you get to meet people. And I had some great conversations with some individuals of other political roots, and I appreciated that opportunity.
And men and women.
Men and women. Mm-hmm. Well, that could get a little awkward. So somebody could show up at a workshop, and their potential opponent could be in the room. Interesting.
Then you get to hear their message.
Mm-hmm. You know, I just thought about talking about tangents. I thought about something that was very interesting that they said. Did you remember they said something about the women? I think there's like a 58%. I could totally be making this up. But the women, they don't run again. That there's this thing that once a woman, there's a percentage, they're lower than if you lose, hopefully that will not be the case in this case, they don't run again. Mm-hmm. And that's where there was a lot of women were talking about this, people that ran.
Yeah. Bystrom from the Carrie Chapman Catt Center for Women in Politics does a lot of research in that area and has had a very busy year, because so much about women running has been getting national attention. But there are those kind of statistics that separate how men go about running again or how they run for the first time. The exciting thing is that in the last few months, nationally, more women are running or have stepped up to be part of a campaign or to put their names forward as a candidate than ever before. And as of February, we were part of 13,000 nationally who had said that they would be running, women. And that was February, and I haven't looked at any new numbers, but I think we can assume it's gone up.
Gail, you have something?
Yeah, I was curious. Was part of the discussion the question of how women are perceived differently in media?
Yes.
You know, like, kind of like in selling your message, how strongly to come across because of the way women's strength is perceived, or, you know, is it too aggressive? So was that part of the discussion?
Well, messaging, but what I'm recalling more is conversations about physical presentation, because we know from campaigns that we've watched nationally. Let's use that one. Hair is critiqued and how you dress is critiqued. And so just like in a lot of other walks of life, women are judged differently. And so whether we like it or not, when you're trying to win a campaign, it's something to be aware of.
And there was somebody, there was a panel, and there was the first workshop and the panel, and this phrase stuck with me because she said, and women, we do it to each other. And she said, women, knock it off. We're doing our own thing.
We need to be supporting each other.
Yes, right. Like the clothing that we're talking about, clothing and things that is just, beside the point.
Well, yeah. You raise an interesting point about women and a certain lack of persistence after losing once. I remember when I practiced law, it always seemed like women took a loss at trial much more with more difficulty and perhaps a little less grace than some of our male colleagues who seem to think like, oh, well, temporary setback. Are we appealing? And so I can see how that would happen. Were there any special, tricks or advice that they gave to women at the workshop that you think really made sense to you?
Well, I think just having some consistency in how you look and how you present yourself, which is probably true for everybody, but maybe a little bit more so for women.
Well, it's certainly an interesting phenomenon that so many women appear to be interested in running for office in 2017 and beyond. It'll be very exciting to see where that goes in terms of the national climate. We just saw recently that the newly elected president of France, hardly a country known for its feminism in action, has named a cabinet that is 50% women. Hmm. What's interesting about that is that there was no history of that, and he just did it. And so who knows where this is going. But there's another program besides Ready to Run Iowa that is active in political circles. And Victoria, I think you and I have to make a disclaimer here, have attended that, and that is Camp Wellstone.
Yes, named after Paul Wellstone, who was a very active and well-loved senator from Minnesota.
Yes, taken too young.
Too young,
too
yes.
young. So tell us a little bit about, I understand that, Camp Wellstone was recently in Iowa. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience there and what you learned?
It was an intensive 3-day workshop, which was great because we were focused completely on working on campaigns. They do these things all over the country. What was different about it to Ready to Run is that the people who were presenting came from all different parts of the country. And so we were getting a mix. I mean, to me, it was kind of fascinating the different, plans or the things that are set in stone about how you do things in a certain part of the country that weren't necessarily always applicable to us, but it was interesting to hear that mix of perspectives. So Wellstone is broken down into three areas. There were I joined the candidates. There were people working on campaigns, and then they had a grassroots strategizing track, which I would love to go back and do sometime. That was the one that you did, correct?
Yes.
But to be able to just focus and think about nothing else except, writing a stump speech, thinking about what various promotional materials were going to look like, having an opportunity to be in small groups and work with other people and actually present myself when I, working on the stump speech, I found it was great. I found it a good use of my time, even though it was an entire weekend.
It was
plus Friday.
Yes, it was long. In your campaign, more of a candidate part of Wellstone, was there quite a few? How was the gender mix? Men, women, young, old? What are we talking about?
Well, I tried to look it up and I couldn't find anything because I knew we were going to ask that. But my recollection is there were more women there.
Interesting.
And there were couple hundred or more of us, maybe 300. I mean, there were a lot of people there.
So you did see a lot of interest in your group among women who were looking to run.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was representative of what is happening across the country, the people who were in that room.
Well, in my grassroots class, I was surprised. It was, I would say, about 8 out of 10 participants were women. And so that would be more of a traditional role for women sort of behind the scenes. A lot of it was how you would support an idea, less sort of upfront from a personal perspective. But it was intense, and we learned a lot of methodology around messaging, and they were very adamant about planning, as you mentioned earlier, Jeanette, about how not just diving in.
Right.
So we were really drilled on the plan.
Yep.
Planning.
And is that your experience in the Canterbury
Park? Oh, definitely. I mean, and components that you kind of know or you've heard or I've heard need to happen, but the how to actually do it was something that we learned, putting together a campaign plan, how to put together a promotional plan, a fundraising plan. Those, to actually have those steps laid out was very beneficial.
Betty, I have a question for you. You've been involved in politics for a long time in Iowa as a lobbyist. You've certainly had an opportunity to observe people in political positions. Do you think attending these kind of workshops leads to better politicians?
I think it makes a great difference in what they know and how they proceed and in the networking. I've been on the board for Ready to Run since 2007, and one of the changes I've seen is the bridging between parties that would come together. I can remember Joni Ernst and Linda Upmeyer sitting together in a panel that I was moderating, and they were poring over the redistricting plan that had just come out in Iowa and looking at their districts, which abut each other in northern Iowa, and just bridging and talking with each other and sharing. And in this kind of environment, between parties, between men and women, that bridging took place. And I think what's happening there is nonpartisan at Ready to Run. And I think that transfers. I could see it across the House and the Senate between Amanda Reagan and Linda Upmeyer and people who were coming to Ready to Run and were carrying that philosophy forward. So, yes, I'd say so.
Well, thank you, Betty. It's been a great morning. I think we've learned a lot about what it takes to get ready for office and the opportunities that abound. And there's just all kinds of resources out there for you who want to run for office. So I want to thank Jeanette, Victoria, Betty for sharing their experiences around political campaign training. And I hope that all of you out there are inspired to enter politics at some fashion, if it's just voting. So please be sure to keep up with Ames Progressive Alliance activities on the Ames Progressive Alliance Facebook page and the APA website at amesprogressivealliance.org. We will be having a picnic on July 9th at Brookside Park, celebrating the achievements of the Alliance since its formation. How many years ago, ladies?
Well, 2 years ago. 2 years May ago. 31st was the first picnic.
And the list is long. You can get a copy of this radio show and listen to it and on the APA website. And as always, I'd like to thank KHOI Radio 89.1 for hosting this show. You're doing a lot to move our community towards a more progressive future. Thank you.
Well, thanks to you for coming in for your monthly segment. And I learned a lot, and I'm kind of inspired. And we'll put links to a lot of this information on our website for people. This is KHOI, and you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host, Gail Seiler. KHOI is broadcast, Local Talk is broadcast on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and all of our past shows online at our website, khoifm.org.
Local Talk was engineered by Evan Taylor. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. KHOI is a community radio station that is driven by volunteers and made possible by donations from individuals, businesses, and organizations in the community. So please support KHOI. It's very easy to donate and become a member. Just go to our website and look for the donate button. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as audience and supporter is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening and see you again on the radio. And a reminder, we have a change in our morning schedule. We have a new addition to our morning schedule. So coming up next on KHOI is Democracy Now!, rebroadcast again later in the evening at 6. But right now you can listen to Democracy Now! And national news headlines from Pacifica Radio. So stay tuned for that. Thanks again to our guests and have a great weekend, everyone.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. Again, that's workinames.com.